Yeah, you flunk out? Oh, that's hard to do. And he laughed. He said, no, he said, as a matter of fact, I sort of gave up on those people. He says, they're all either psychiatrists or cab drivers. So it was a curious way. But, no, I the philosophy as we developed it really was, first of all, a reflection of how those of us who were involved in the law school felt about legal education. And it was a philosophy that grew out of the response that we had from different people. I mean, the people themselves who came here began to define the institution. And our definition of the institution drew from the people who were here. The Roger Lanes, the old Detroit newspaper, free press guy who goes to law school in his senior years. The gal, Jacqueline, I can't think of her last name, Jackie, one of the very first classes, lived across the street from Wayne State University's law school and came up here on the Greyhound bus every day, hour and a half up and an hour and a half back. She couldn't get into Wayne State University Law School, but this place gave her a chance to go to law school. She was a good student, but she's done well. But basically, what we did, we're doing was to offer people a chance to go to law school who didn't otherwise, couldn't otherwise go. The reasons they couldn't otherwise go were myriad, because they were stuck in Lansing and couldn't commute all the way to Detroit. That was one of the main reasons. In the early times, we had a lot of people with high academic credentials who were just here in Lansing and had always wanted to go to law school. We also had people who had applied to every law school in the state or around in the Midwest who couldn't get in and who came to us. And we're capable of doing the work.
Did you become, excuse me for interrupting again, but did you become very acutely aware and disapproving of the practice at particularly the University of Michigan Law School, where I think you recited some figures not so long ago, where if there are 300 or 400 slots for new students, there are thousands of applicants, and those applicants are screened pretty much in quite a rigid way in terms of their scores on the aptitude test, or do I have it not quite right? You see what I mean?
No, I think there's no question that you have it right, that that's what they do.
And so here's a person of great merit. Let's take a minority guy that was sort of held back for a while, and he's bursting out into the clear in an intellectual way, and he wants to go. Well, he can't hit 800 or whatever the heck it is on that test. Therefore, he's shut out. Well, right. My example might not be too good, but just what do you have to say about that?
Well, your example is a good one. Because it's not just the University of Michigan, although University of Michigan is a top school in the country. When they name the top law school in America, University of Michigan is generally among the top 10 that are mentioned. How do you get to be top? Well, the definition of a law school generally comes from three things. Your physical plant, which includes library and buildings and computers and whatever else you have that's impressive, you know. That's sort of the least important prestige factor, but it is a factor. Your faculty, which is in some circles regarded as a very important prestige factor. Do you have faculty who are well known, who are well regarded? Who are the author, the man who wrote the book, type of thing? Are they being tapped all the time by Washington to go down there and be advisors and take leave of absence from your faculty to be the head honcho or whatever? Are they being drawn former clerks of the United States Supreme Court, all that stuff. And that's probably a secondary, though very important, basis on which, quote, prestige of law schools is established. But in the law school world, to the extent that there is a pecking order of better schools, the key factor is always, what are your LSAT scores?
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Still true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. How, as a matter of fact, the operative buzzword in educational circles is, how selective are you? They don't use the word elitist. How selective are you? And the more selective school is the harder school to get into. If a school is impossible to get into, it's a wonderful school. You know, that's the less chance you have of getting educated at that institution, the better that institution must be. The less chance you have of getting into it. And so that only the top students, only the most brilliant students, only those who least need to be taught anything are admitted to your institution. That makes you the finest educational institution in the world. Okay? Now, I don't understand that. It's like saying only, it's like having a hospital that only takes the healthiest people. See, this is a wonderful hospital because nobody ever dies in it. And nobody ever dies in it because nobody ever comes there who's sick. Everybody who goes there are people who are in wonderful good health. You know, and say, I go to Mayo Clinic. But then, of course, I had to pass many physicals locally before I ever got to Mayo Clinic because they had to know that I was perfectly clear before I ever got there. You know? Well, I mean, that to me is a ludicrous measure. But it is the standard measure of excellence in educational institutions. How smart are your kids? How smart are your kids? If they're the smartest kids in the world, then you got the best school. Okay. Now, given that, the schools, for whatever reason, I suppose because of a combination of things, all aspire to be that, to be the best, by that definition. And therefore, what you do when you start, when you go to fill your class, is you rank all of your applicants according to the academic criteria, which in this case is the LSAT score or some combination of LSAT and undergraduate grade point average. Typically, that's what you're going to do, creating an index score. You rank them according to that index. And then you go down the index as far as you have to go to fill up your class.